Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your guitar versus synth scrimmage of music news and criticism. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. Physical emotions from the band Black Bananas. Jennifer Harima from Black Bananas is here with us today. Hi, Jennifer.
Hey, Ben. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So you've just come from the airport.
Yes.
You're in New York for a lightning visit.
Yes.
For a DJ set tonight.
Yeah. Photo shoot after this.
Yes.
DJ set tonight. Show tomorrow. And then we leave the next day.
And the Black Bananas show Friday. If you're
free.
Listening to this Friday afternoon, it's free at South Street Seaport.
That's right.
So, Black Bananas, your newish, not so new anymore, band.
Yeah, we had one album prior to this.
Yeah.
It's kind of the body of work kind of started as RTX with the same people, but we kind of morphed it. Like, we introduced new sounds, we kind of changed stuff up, and the first Black Bananas album was actually supposed to be, we were making it as if we were making an RTX album, but when it was all done, it felt like it had crossed over to something. I was like, I want to take the opportunity to, like, get rid of the old name and just kind of start fresh, even though it's the same people.
Right.
So that happened, like, last minute. Like, we had already turned everything in. I was like, okay, we were going to change the artwork. Let's change the name, da-da-da.
So this record, Electric Brick Wall,
mm-hmm.
to some extent you can hear this on Physical Emotions, what we came in with. The amazing thing about this record for me is that this record seems to make an argument that there's, like, no difference between, like, guitar rock and, you know, synth pop or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was proved long ago by really streamlined bands like the Cars or whatever.
Yeah.
But in this record, it's like the guitars and the synths are, like, attacking each other.
Yeah.
And so there's this, like, heavy density and heavy,
very dense.
And heavy buildup.
Mm-hmm.
But this time, with this record, there's also funk.
Yeah.
So the first thing I want to ask you about is, like, the density. That's something that comes out of you. That was something that was in Royal Trucks and most of the stuff you've worked on.
It's like,
it's
just kind of the way I work. I'll have an idea and I'll be like, Brian, hey, like, check out this melody line. I'll be like, you know, a lot of times I don't even have words. So I'm just singing, like, you know, like, this or that. And I was like, how about, and then I'll get my air guitar and I'll be like, how about, like, and then he will, he'll, like, work on something. And then I'll have, like, before I had JMO would come in and, like, riff off of him. But JMO is not in this band right now. But then I would get on the synth and just, like, start making noises. And, you know, basically, because I'm there every day, at the end of the day, we compile, like, if we've done anything other than play video games or something, like, we will compile, like, the stuff and weed out. Like, you kind of know when there's, like, a cool part, and then we'll save the cool part and just keep adding to it, and then I'll come up with a melody line. And the way I work, like, visually as well, like,
mm-hmm.
like with collages I've been doing for, like, 20 years and things like that, where I see or hear something and it exists in, like, you know, in a linear way, but I kind of want it to be more three-dimensional so that I start adding on top of it.
So you take it out of its own line.
Yeah.
And you put it into this pile.
I don't know.
Okay,
that's just the way I've always done it.
So a minute ago, you were talking about how you make songs, and at some point you said, you take some stuff out.
Yeah.
So you do take some stuff out.
Yeah, you know when it's just like, you're like, ah.
But at the end, you want to have a product that sounds like you've just piled stuff on, layers and layers and layers.
Yeah, I mean, the idea, I mean, the end game is not to be like, oh, our sound is piled, da da da. But I think that because of the process that you do get that sense. It's not, you know, I don't continue with that particular process just for the sake of staying, you know, constant or consistent.
Yeah. But to some degree, that's
some
what
degree,
comes to you naturally.
Yeah, that is, yeah.
So where do you work? You used to.
We have a studio.
You have your own studio.
Yeah, I've had my own studio.
That makes a difference, right?
Oh, totally. Because there's there's no parameters. Like, I mean, I have in the past set parameters. Like, okay, we're going to do this, and we're going to start this day, and I want it done like this day in 3 weeks. And I just set like just random parameters, and like that's what gets done. I've done like records like that, and then this record was like the antithesis, where we were just kind of working on it like out of the first Black Bananas album. There was a lot of stuff kind of left behind because I was like, in, you know, the dudes, they wanted to keep working on it. And I was like, no, this album's done, finished, close the door. And that one went. And then I was like, now we can like mess around with this other extra, you know, stuff. And so it's been like full on since, you know, it's 2 years since the first album came out. And Brian and I go to the studio almost every day and just mm-hmm. see what happens, and that's mm-hmm. about it. You know, Kurt goes to work and then comes over after, and Nadav comes down and sets stuff up, and it's what I do.
Yeah.
It's like going to a job, but it's not well, – I don't consider it work, but it's a schedule. It's a schedule. Some place for
sure.
me to get out of the house and go to the studio and see what happens
sure.
and hang out with the dudes and see what's what.
I haven't seen Black Bananas live yet. How do you do this live?
Well, Brian uses Ableton, so we kind of like a lot of the tracks, you know, like the drum tracks and stuff are he's triggering them with his guitar.
Right.
Kurt has got like multiple synthesizers. I've got one little synthesizer, and we have like a backing like ghost vocal, so that I sing, but it's not like, you know, you sing live over something really dense, it doesn't mesh.
Sure.
Right. So, and for it to mesh, like we have this kind of back, like a little bit of a backing. Like we took the individual vocal tracks,
yeah,
and he can control them, and I can control them, like
right.
the volume of it. So they sound like more like the album in a live situation. Yeah,
No live drummers.
No,
it's not
no.
like when Beyonce goes on tour.
No.
And she brings, you know.
Yeah, no, it's not necessary. Uh-huh. It's not necessary now.
To this music,
yeah, at all. Like, because, you know, most of the stuff was just programmed anyway. I mean, we've had, like, on the first album, we did have some real drums, you know, and we just used those as samples. And, you know, I've toured with full bands, two guitar, drums, bass, all that, like, but when we started Black Bananas, I kind of wanted to like pare everything down. No pretense of a band or a rock band, or, you know, you're going to hear how it was for us in the studio, kind of. And there's like room for errors because the Ableton, it's basically if he's playing and he changes something up, the whole thing changes up, and we all kind of roll with it. It's uh-huh. kind of exciting in a weird way.
Is Black Bananas particular people, or is it like a strategy?
Yeah, well, it's both. I've kind of called the people into I think the big picture, my big picture. So now they're Black Bananas too. I don't know. It's me and Nadav and Brian and Kurt. Nadav doesn't tour. He doesn't go anywhere. He uh-huh. doesn't. He's obsessed with gear. He brings in gear. Like we play. Like that's, you know, the genesis of finding new sounds. Like he'll like bring in, you know, weird new synths and mm-hmm. you know, set things up, and we'll like play with it. So it's very the relationship is very symbiotic. Everybody brings something to the table. Nadav no less, you know, just because he doesn't play or nobody's ever seen him, he's very important, he's integral. But it's the four of us,
right.
But I think at this point, having worked with these guys so long, I think, you know, we are all on the same page. I think, you know, when like 10 years ago when I, you know, met them, it was like, that's why it was RTX we started. I started kind of soft on that, like kind of more traditional, like coming from like the roots of rock and roll, like really just like full band style, and kind of looking to find the places where we intersected, our tastes intersected. And at that time, early on, JMO's, you know, full metalhead. I would like genre that I totally love, but no more than others. Brian and Kurt's really, like, really hip-hop. Like, he's from the South, and he's, you know, everything. Metal, hip-hop, like, everything.
Yeah.
Kind of like me. And then Brian, same thing, but he's, but he's also into a lot of just really more experimental stuff. But anyway, at the beginning, we went with the real simple things that we all intersected on. And it just happened to be kind of like the simple, lowest common denominator, metal, rock. And, of course, it was never going to be that specifically. But that's where I started them off from. And as we started working together, and they learned how I worked, and I would show them new things. I took JMO to his first Funkadelic show, and I, you know, he was a young kid when I first met him, and just, you know, just took a long time for them to get to know the way I work and for me to kind of inadvertently, you know, bring them into my mindset and what I was doing. And, you know, I would get mad at times, you know, when JMO would be just, like, there was no flexibility in his playing, because he's just kind of, like, virtuosic. Like, he, you know, if a note is off, he's, like, freaking. And I'm like, dude, that's so, like, try changing that, you know, opinion, you know, without, you know, being forceful. And, like, you know, being, like, just go with the flow. Like, if it bends at, you know, if the harmonic is all like attitude, just use that sound, just keep your ears open and whatever. And those are the kind of little tiny things that have been going on for 10 years to get to the place where they all get me
to the extent one can.
Exactly.
All right, so let's hear another track from the middle of the album, Electric Brick Wall by Black Bananas. Let's hear Eve's Child. Back up 1 second in your story about how this group evolved. Before Black Bananas, it kind of came out of RTX. Okay, before RTX was Royal Trucks, which the band you were in with Neil Haggerty from 1987?
I think it was 88.
Okay.
But then again, something, my linear, yeah.
Something like
late
that
80s.
To 2001?
2001, yeah.
And that band, it did a bunch of things, but it did two things really well, I thought. One was this kind of like really vivid, intuitive mess. And then the other thing was like, what is rock and roll? Like boiling down a riff rock song to its essence and, and writing like some truly great ones.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where you were toward the end of Royal Trucks.
Yeah.
So then the next band for you is RTX.
Yeah.
Did you want to carry over something of Royal Trucks into that?
Well, I was carrying over one half of Royal Trucks.
Yeah.
Because I am one half of it.
Without
so,
Neil.
We had talked about it, and he was like, yeah, you should totally do that. You should totally use that. But it, you know, it never occurred to me. But and then people wanted to know, well, what does RTX stand for? And I was like, it stands for Rad Times Express. And they're like, oh, we thought it stood for sure. Royal Chucks. And I was like, no. Like, and then it just confused people. and then it's kind of like I felt like that if you said RTX, like there was already a preconceived notion. There were expectations like that we couldn't push any further without it being, I don't know, subconsciously shut down in some people's sure. minds. So that was where the change came from, because Black Bananas was taken from the song off
Oh, from a Royal Truck song.
Yeah. Well, no, that, yeah, there's a banana question, but also the RTX album, Western Exterminator. It was about, you know, this song was kind of about collecting just tossed off stuff that people like threw away garbage, and, you know, whether it was like old photographs or jeans or bananas or whatever, like.
You mean things on the ground and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, yeah, like in the riverbeds and everything like that. And I was like, wow, this is cool, you know, and basically, and then I wrote the song and I was like, all this tossed off stuff is like my gold.
That's your aesthetic.
Yeah.
Like you find stuff and save it.
I'm a garbage collector. That's one of the lines from the song. So. Yeah. And so then when I was thinking, okay, so what do we change the name to? I was talking to Dan Kretzky. Like, he's one of my best friends that owns Drag City. And he's like, Jennifer. And I was like, what? And he's like, you know, it should be Black Bananas. And I was like, yeah, probably. He's like, it's Black Bananas. And I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. So he just, you know, told me what I already knew. But
so you grew up in D.C., right?
Mm-hmm.
Which musically, in the 80s anyway, was kind of a sceney place, right?
Yeah. Northwest D.C. was very sceney. Hardcore.
Well, this exciting hardcore stuff was going on, and you were either in that or you were not.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was your position there?
Minor
Threat.
Yeah, yeah. I knew all those guys. I dated Skeeter from Scream. Mm-hmm. I hung out with Ian MacKaye. Was dating Cynthia Connolly, and I would see them all the time because her sister Anna was my best friend. Mm-hmm. And da da da. But they all lived in Northwest. I lived in Southeast. I lived kind of like in the ghetto, basically, and. Kind of the Discord thing kind of was central around Wilson High School and Georgetown Day School, mm-hmm. which were both up in Northwest. I wasn't straight edge. I was never straight edge. Mm-hmm. And there were facets of, you know, there were facets of the scene that, you know, like Iron Cross and stuff like that, where they were definitely not straight edge, but they still all, you know, commingled. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a small scene at first. I mean, and the thing is that I was as tall as I am now, like even when I was like 12, 13, and they were all ages shows. So I got to meet people when I was really young.
I see. Yeah.
And so I kind of got brought into the fold, like, and,
right.
you know, but because of where I lived and stuff, I didn't embrace and delve deep into a scene. I never really have.
From the first time I started hearing Royal Trucks records to now, I don't really perceive your work back then or now as a part of something
anything.
Something
no.
bigger. And I don't know, you know, I don't go to L.A. that much, so I'm speaking out of ignorance. But
there's
but,
nothing like it in L.A. either, mm-hmm. I don't think. Are you going to ask me about the scenes there?
Yeah. Like in terms of what's going on there now.
Very much. Well, like I've noticed, you know, there's definitely the whole garage rock movement and the
Burger Records
and beyond, just the garage rock thing in general.
Yeah.
And then there was like this folk psych Arthur magazine stuff back then that then the garage kind of grew out of it. I think what's going to happen next and what I'm starting to see is I think like people are getting like their kicks on like AM Gold, like just like the mellow jams, like, you know, America and, you know, Bread and like really just there's a band, Foxygen, and they've asked us to tour with them a few times and we haven't been able to do that. But I heard one of their songs and I was like, this is like off of my AM Goal CD. And I was like, and it's not just them. I think that's the way things in Cali are going in a particular scene.
You mean they're going towards
that's the new sound,
some kind of recreation of like a generalized distant past?
It always is. Yeah. I mean, as long as it's recognizable and people can rally around it and understand what it is and name it and label it, it's because I think especially, you know, in scenes and stuff, it's just such a music is such a social thing. Mm-hmm. You know, groups kind of crop up around certain bands, you know, their aesthetic, the way they dress, the way they you know, talk to each other mm-hmm. about music and stuff like that. And you see that definitely in LA. And then the way that the fashions kind of morph from like hippie-ish to Zappa-ish, and now kind of like seeing like Mick Fleetwood, like white suit, like soft act. This is just, this is what I don't know for a fact, but this is what I'm seeing. This is what I'm.
What's your involvement with fashion now?
I have a line with Pamela Love and Dan Kretzky. We started a company. It's called Feathered Fish. And we just came out with basically, they're just really random items that I want. And so instead of just having make one, make like 50.
Do you make a prototype
and
yourself?
Well, I mean, the first one was a ring and it was a prototype and Pamela made the prototype. Second one are these hand-woven Japanese artisans made these flip-flops out of – they're like crazy hand-woven and we picked out all of the textiles and everything like that. And it's just kind of things that I see and I'm like, I want that. So like – you know, and Kretzky funds it. And so I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, let's make this. So this is, it's just the beginning of that.
Where can you get this stuff?
Online. The Zoris, the flip-flops will be up like next week, I think.
Yeah.
And he's hired somebody to start looking into, you know, like placement and these. See, I don't know anything about fashion, like mm-hmm. merchandising or anything like that. I mean, I did four lines with Volcom. I did two denim lines, one full line that, you know, from dresses all the way. And that was basically, you know, they did all the work, but I would, you know, come in and pick the fabrics and tell them, like, you know, what kind of silhouettes and just I would just go over there and work it out with them. Mm-hmm. So it's been about a year since I've done a line with them. I'm still an ambassador for them. I still...
You'll show up at important events.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. I like fashion. I don't necessarily like what I've seen of the fashion world. It's just like the entertainment world too. Like there's all sorts of weirdness and like hierarchies and just whatever.
Yeah.
That doesn't interest me. So I just kind of do my thing over here in my world. And then I have to say I'm very grateful that, you know, I've been allowed to let, you know, my things, whatever it is that I do, like kind of flow into, you know, the normal business of fashion or music or art for that matter.
Yeah.
It's really awesome.
But all the stuff you do informs each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to get back to that question for a minute about like scenes and, you know, whether or not one band feels part of a larger orbit. In your case, not so much. I read something that you wrote for Quietus recently about records that meant a lot to you.
The Baker's Dozen.
Yeah. And there was this like great list of records, Funkadelic and Rolling Stones' Sticky Fingers and Physical Graffiti and Ghetto Boys and stuff. And and I started to think that, you know, how some bands do feel like they're in a dialogue with other bands, you know, working at the same time.
Yeah.
I wonder to what extent you feel like you're in a dialogue with, like, old records.
I'm obviously, like, I'm informed by them. So, therefore, you know, that's my hard drive. All the stuff I've listened to and, like, kept, like, you know, some things I've probably heard and couldn't remember, whatever, obviously didn't do anything for me, but I feel like I am the product of all that I've heard, you know, and the way I filter it out is what, you know, I call my own, which is, you know, filtered through me. Because, you know, everybody, a lot of people listen to those records, but take different things away from them, mm-hmm. And they affect them differently. It's kind of sucks. I have a really hard time listening to some of my favorite records anymore.
Why?
Because I don't hear them anymore. I don't hear them for, like, what they are. It just takes me back to another time and place. Like, that sucks. Like, I can't just, like, listen to it and enjoy it right here in the present now because it's linked to so many things.
Sure.
That my brain won't shut it off.
So sure.
There's so much stuff that I love that I just won't listen to because I just don't want to go backward.
I don't know if you want to, like, talk about this on a song-by-song level, but some older music seemed to directly inspire some of the things on the new records, say. Like,
yeah,
I was listening
to
one track and thinking, wait, that's definitely from Zap, you know?
Absolutely.
So I was wondering whether there's something in particular you do when you're putting songs together. Do you have something in particular in mind, a particular song, a particular band, whatever? Or is it just kind of you wake up one day you're feeling a sound,
absolutely. And it's not I have a huge record collection, and it's not like I went through and just, like, you know, came upon something that I loved and re-fell in love with and wanted to utilize. It's more like what I said, the stuff that just sticks, that's just stuck there. Different guitar sounds, different bass sounds, just different things. Like, sometimes, you know, it'll be way after the fact, and I'll be listening, I'll be like, oh, that kind of sounds like, I've got to figure this out. There's one song, I swear to God, there's like some Style Council thing in there.
On this new record?
Yes.
Which song?
We
can have listeners figure it out.
Yeah, figure it out. It's definitely, there's a Style Council moment in there, and it freaked me out.
Is it just one layer of 10 inside one song?
It's a guitar. There is a guitar melody that really, I was like, I remember that from when I was a kid. Style Council.
It's a freaky feeling, isn't it? When you hear something and you know it.
Yeah.
And you might have even made it, but you don't know it is.
But you didn't know where it came from. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's just like, you know, just what the hard drive, you know, like, mm-hmm. what's permeated and just sticks there. And then it comes out in various ways.
All right. So let's go out with Powder 8. What can you tell us about Powder 8?
Powder 8. Well, Neil and I wrote that song together. He lives in Colorado now, so Powder 8, I guess.
A long time ago you wrote this together?
No.
Recently?
Yeah, this past year. Uh-huh. You know, via email. And so...
Words and sound files?
Yeah, well, not so much sound files. He did, like, a real rough, like, just a guitar and a mic just to show me how he was thinking about it.
Yeah.
We kind of usurped it and moved it forward and stuff. But Powder 8, I guess, is a ski competition or something. And then, like, when I was listening to, like, some of the words he sent, and then I changed some of it. Then I started thinking about, it's kind of like living at the beach with the surfers. Like, it's like this total, like, a bro mentality. Like, you know, like...
Are you a surfer?
I surf, but I'm not a surfer.
You know about that culture.
Oh, very much.
You know about that.
That's Volcom, dude.
Movement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We should have been talking about this 20 minutes ago.
Wow.
No, but anyway, let's skiing.
Yes. Yeah. So, it's rolling with the meat every night. And, like, we were laughing. Like, it's like just the dudes. I think it's very abstract. People don't know really what it means, but it's actually very linear. It's just kind of about rolling with the bros.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, Powder 8 from Electric Brick Wall by Black Bananas. Jennifer Harima, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
What's today?
that's our show. You can see Black Bananas down at South Street Seaport on Friday, which should be happening after this goes online. You can read, actually, my review of Electric Brick Wall from some weeks back at nytimes.com/music. Our producer is Jocelyn Gonzalez. Check out our Spotify playlist. I don't know. Do you have anything on Spotify?
Your
label doesn't like that.
No, we don't do it either.
There might be something there, though. Something you contributed to, like Falcom compilation or something,
perhaps,
right?
Perhaps, yeah.
Maybe we'll do a Spotify.
Or just go to YouTube if you want to hear the music.
YouTube. Go to YouTube.com.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll put a Spotify compilation up of bands that you love.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That would be great, actually.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.